From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, Chinese officials are warning that President Trump's hard line on China could lead to a new Cold War. The warning comes as China is preparing to conduct war games off the coast of Taiwan. The question is China attempting to take advantage of the global distraction created by the coronavirus, which they unleashed on the world, or are they trying to distract their own people from the growing global hostility toward the communist regime? Florida Congressman Ted Yoho, member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, is here in just a moment. And the World Health Organization is warning a second peak in the first wave of the coronavirus could occur. What is needed to make sure that the reopening of society is a safe and prosperous one? Dr. Martin McCary, he is at the John Hopkins School of Public Health. He has some answers for us. And speaking of reopening, Dan Celia is here with the economic outlook as the stock market responds to the reopening of society. Also, over the weekend, a story suggests there are some within the Trump administration that want to scuttle the GOP's conservative party platform because, quote unquote, it alienates some voters. Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati and Ohio Secretary of State, joins me for that discussion. And the Trump administration advancing another pro-family rule that has the left all worked up. What is it? Travis Weber, vice president of policy here at the Family Research Council, will join me with the details later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And let me remind you, this is a great opportunity to download the Stand Firm app. If you don't already have the app, you can get it at the App Store. That way, you not only will you be tuned in for every edition of Washington Watch, but, for instance, as we'll talk later with Travis Weber about this proposed rule, we'll send you alerts so you know exactly who to contact and what to say so that you can be a full participant in this republic of ours. Again, get the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store or go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right. Reports that the Chinese government engaging in war games off the coast of Taiwan could potentially lead to an invasion of Taiwan. Are they taking advantage of a world that is distracted by the coronavirus, or are they trying to shore up their own loss of support within the borders of their own country? Joining me now to talk about this, Congressman Ted Yoho. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of the Sunshine State. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, great to be on, Tony. Thanks for having me there.
All right, Congressman Yoho, so what are we to make of China's move there on the coast of Taiwan?
China needs to be real careful about any missteps. You know, they have been claiming the one country, two systems, and it all hinges on the 1992 consensus, which was never a consensus. It was a meeting, and there was no agreement at the end of that. And so they're basing this on false claims, and they're trying to control a narrative that Taiwan is a part of the PRC. Make no mistake about it. Taiwan has never been a part of the People's Republic of China, which is communist controlled. And all one has to do is look at the history, and you see Chiang Kai-shek left after the Civil War and went to Taiwan. And Taiwan was formerly known as the island of Formosa, an independent nation, and that's where Taiwan came from.
Now, Congressman Yoho, I know you pay close attention to these foreign policy issues, and that's one of the reasons we have you on the program often, because I think, especially in the last few months where we've been focused domestically on the coronavirus, its effect, the shutdown, all of the impact that it's had on our economy, so on and so forth, we cannot take our eye off of these important moves, especially this one here by China. Now, what do you think is the major motivator here? Do you think they have a sense that the world is distracted and they can make this move on Taiwan? Of course, we also have the move on Hong Kong as well. So, I mean, they're making these moves at present. Is it because they feel like the rest of the world is distracted and won't respond? Or is this to shore up their waning support at home?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think they're both. I think primarily what they are doing is they're testing the waters. And what we have known historically about China, if you watch them, you know, they make this felonious false claim to the nine dash lines of the South China Sea or the East Sea that they claim is sovereign territory. They're making a claim to the Arctic, and the world agreement between nations is you have to be a nation that is contiguous with the Arctic to have any claims to it. And it's based on your sea border on that area. And they have none, but they're claiming they have near Arctic claims. And so what they're doing with Taiwan is they're trying to control that narrative that it's part of China. It is not. It is a distinct culture. The Taiwanese people identify as Taiwanese, not Chinese. The last election of President Tsai very emphatically drove that point home when she had the largest victory of any president in their young democracy. And China is overstepping its boundaries and testing the waters, and they will pay for this. And nobody wants a conflict, but what every one of your listeners and every one of us as an American can do is let's stop buying anything made in China. And it's tough right now trying to find anything not made in China. But in time, in a short period of time, you're going to see manufacturers being made anywhere. And we wrote a policy paper on this, Tony. It's called Manufacture the ABC Method, which is manufacture anywhere but China.
And this is a way that every American can participate in this is simply by buying American or products not made in China, because that basically fuels the engine that drives that communist regime. The significance of what is taking place here, of course, the administration, I think, banning business with 33 Chinese businesses late last week, which has fueled this threat of a Cold War emerging between the two economic superpowers. But they're moving two aircraft carriers there toward the coast of Taiwan. First time these right. two massive aircraft carriers have been together. Did they know, understand, I should say, what they're dealing with in President Trump, that he is not the typical American leader that we've had in the past?
No, they don't understand that. They think America will back down. Keep in mind that we, since President Reagan, we have an agreement to sell Taiwan weapons for their defensive, and I got to highlight that, defensive protection. They are our 11th largest trading partner, and they're a Western democracy, and they punch way above their weight as far as a population. And China is testing the waters, and they're pushing this, and they're going to pay very strongly in economic damage to their country. And Xi Jinping is trying to make the stand that he's in control of everything. You know, and you brought up Hong Kong. Hong Kong, everybody agrees, is a province of China. But China and the Communist Party broke the agreement between the United Kingdom and China, the leaders then, in 1997, where there was supposed to be a 50-year period of time for a peaceful transition where Hong Kong reverted back to China. And it's right. in the process, but right. 22 years into it, Xi Jinping and the Communist Party have overlooked that, and they have written that agreement off. And he says it no longer abides, or they're not bound by that. And that is totally false, and that shows you that moving forward, the Chinese Communist Party – and I'm a communist over and over again, and Xi Jinping cannot be trusted. And what Xi Jinping is doing is he's bringing the second century of shame on the Chinese people, but he's doing it through a power grab. And you ask why they were doing this. This is strictly authoritarian power grab so that he can show that he has the backbone to stand up, and their whole country is going to suffer from this.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida, my guest. He represents the 3rd Congressional District. We're discussing what is taking place right now as it pertains to China, Taiwan and Hong Kong, where we see China trying to consolidate power, move on both Hong Kong and potentially militarily on Taiwan. Now, the issue here, in my view, Congressman Yoho, is I know this president has been very clear he doesn't want to entangle the United States in foreign wars. He's trying to get us out of these wars. But this is an issue of, as you point out, to Taiwan. We have we have a relationship with that country, and I think we're bound to assist them if China makes a move on them. I mean, this could easily trigger a military confrontation between China and the United States if China is not careful.
They really are, Tony, and Chinese leaders need to really, you know, understand what they're walking into, because they will cross their Rubicon where they can't go back. And that's something nobody wants to see in the world. And they have to understand that the Taiwanese people voted for President Tsai and had the largest winning results they've ever had. And it's a mandate by the Taiwanese people that, and the reason they did that was because she stood up so strongly against the reunification. You know, China talks about reunification, and they talk about one China, two policies. But when they talk about reunification, they left out a very important factor. They never consulted the Taiwanese people. They don't want that. And they have their own military, their own government system. They're a Western democracy. You know, the flag, they have their own flag. We can go on and on and on. They are an independent nation, and I just penned an editorial that says it is time for not just us, but other nations around the world to recognize Taiwan as an independent nation. And if we put this off, there will be a conflict. But if we all stand up together, because the United States shouldn't do this on their own, this should be all Western democracies should realize that Taiwan is an independent nation. And the sooner we do that, we have drawn a line that says this is a line you don't cross, China, and China will have to respond. And the best way to get China to respond is economic pressure on them. And that's where the manufacturing outside of anywhere but China needs to happen, and it needs to happen rapidly. And we've done things with the American Jobs Cut and Tax or Tax Cut and Jobs Act and the other incentives, you know, with our APIs and our pharmaceuticals, the rare earth metals, the vitamins and minerals that go into our livestock feed, and the trace elements that go into our fertilizers all come from China. We're in the process of moving that out of China. That economic pressure will get them to pay attention.
One final very quick question for you. While there is the stakes are high, I think this is the point where China is most vulnerable and where we can make a move to recalibrate the relationship with China. Is that correct?
That is correct. And they need to understand that President Trump doesn't have play in him. He is serious about what he does.
All right. Congressman Yoho, we actually have a link to your op-ed on the website. We'll encourage people to take a look at that. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you, Tony, for what you do. Bye.
All right. Congressman Ted Yoho. In fact, as I mentioned, we've got his piece at TonyPerkins.com. All right. Coming up next, what does reopening America safely look like? We talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, yesterday, the World Health Organization said countries where coronavirus infections are declining could still face an immediate second peak if they let up too soon on measures to halt the outbreak. Now, how can we restart the economy, get society open again safely? Most people agree that the economic consequences of staying shut down would be devastating. We've got to do it. How do we do it right? Join me now to talk about this, Dr. Martin McCary of Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. He's been on the program before. He's got a piece that he wrote about it's time to reopen, but there's a way to do it safely. Dr. McCary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
So you were advocating early on that, yeah, we got to shut things down. We got to slow the spread. But there came a point where you said, all right, we did it. We took our medicine. Now it's time to get open back up again. But we've got to do it in a safe manner.
That's right. The country cannot tolerate a harsh lockdown any longer. It's having an effect on health outcomes on the other end. At the same time, this unfortunately has become a polarized issue, and the answer is somewhere in the middle. We've got to reopen, but we've got to do it carefully. So in the piece I wrote in the New York Times, I basically outlined a strategy of how we can do that based on the background level of the virus threat in a particular community. And that means we need to be careful. It means we need to wear masks when we cannot maintain a social distance. We need to think creatively about redesigning our business processes for the short term until we get to some kind of therapeutic.
All right, let me take this piece by piece. First off, a one-size-fits-all does not work. It's got to be crafted for the needs of that community, that area, correct?
Yes, not all reopenings are created equal, and so everyone's got to be custom-tailored.
Now, I want to go to something that's maybe controversial. I don't know, but I want you to unpack it for us as you do in this piece a bit. And that is the issue of universal masking. You say you talked to medical experts in China where they were able to slow the spread and contain it. And this they pointed to as one of the critical components.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, more and more doctors are recognizing the data on masks. And that's because we're appreciating more that it is from airborne droplets and less from commonly touched surfaces. We even saw the CDC put out a statement last week that it's not as much from touching common surfaces as it is from the airborne droplets. Now, there are micro droplets that people spread when they sing in a choir or speak, or, you know, some people spit when they talk, others don't. Well, there's always some micro spread of droplets.
So every preacher's got to wear one of those, right? You say, That's a joke. Coming from a preacher, how they like to spit on the front row. So never mind. That didn't go over. Go ahead.
Yeah, if they're really into the sermon, they might need 20 feet or something like that. But we're learning more. Look, we didn't have good data going into this pandemic, right?
Right.
We had really poor data from overseas. Some of it was not reported honestly. We didn't know the denominator. We didn't even know how contagious it was. So we threw the kitchen sink at this, and we asked the country to make major sacrifices in March. I was one of those people calling for a shutdown of non-essential activities. But now we need to learn from the data, and we're learning many things. The number one thing is that masks are very effective in reducing transmission. It actually allows us to do a lot of activities that we previously didn't think we could do with the virus in the background.
Okay, tell me, when should people be wearing masks? Where and when should they be wearing masks?
So the number one factor is the background viral load in the community. Okay, if you're living in Palau or someplace with almost no virus, then you know what, live your life. But right now, we're going to have a quiescent summer, and then we may or may not see a resurgence in the fall until we get to a therapeutic, whenever that may be, let's say 9 months to 12 months from now. People should wear masks anytime they cannot maintain 6 feet. That means a busy running trail, you wear a mask. A non-crowded running trail where you're not going to come close to people, you don't have to wear a mask. So it's very dependent.
All right. One other aspect, well, there's multiple aspects, but one I want to draw out. You just said spend more time outside.
Yeah, you know, one of the early things that we told people to do that we should not have told people to do is to stay at home. We should have told them, stay on your property or try to do things outdoors or simply distance, that is, stay 6 feet clear of other people. So we've learned the outdoors is safer than the indoors. And if you notice, a lot of the southern states really did not get hit as some of the projections anticipated. Many of the hard-hit areas were areas with a long cold season. Illinois, Washington State, Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Minnesota is getting hit right now. So you look at these areas, what's common to those areas? People tend to do things indoors. In the southern states, they tend to do more things outdoors, and there's an effect by heat, probably by virtue of increased humidity, which we know is a barrier for transmission.
All right, we're almost out of time, but you also say, look, businesses must adapt. This is more of a market-based approach where if they want people to feel safe, they're going to have to change the way they do business.
Yeah, I hope we can get away from the politicalization of this issue. It's really tragic. Instead of talking about whether or not something should be open or closed, we should be talking about whether or not they can maintain distancing, use good hygiene, and safe precautions. If they can't, you know, a crowded NFL stadium cannot, for example, that means that, you know, that would either have to be modified or just postponed. Other businesses, they can maintain social distance, and so those businesses can function full function. But you look at the meatpacking industry, a good example of an industry with close quarters that needed to be modified.
Yes. True, especially working conditions. But when you look at establishments, restaurants and such, I think people also have to use common sense and not going into places where they feel like they might be at risk.
Absolutely.
And of course, you also talk about the high risk populations as well. We need to protect them. Great piece. I'm going to encourage people to take a look at it at TonyPerkins.com. Dr. McCary, as always, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right. Thanks so much. All right. Coming up next, when we come back, we're going to take a look at the stock market and the economy as businesses open back up. What are the prospects for America's economy? Dan Celia is here next. Don't go away. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and the website is tonyperkins.com. So good to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. I was actually chuckling a little bit about the mask. I think it's a good idea. You're in crowded places. The airlines now require that you wear a mask. I was flying last week, and I was in an airport. I think I was in Dallas. It was just kind of comical. If I would have... Maybe I should have taken a video of it, but, you know, people wearing their mask when they get off the plane, and there was not very many places are open, but there was, I think, one of these pretzel places open. And they've got, the plexiglass between the customers and the staff, and everybody's wearing masks, and nobody could understand each other. They were yelling to try to be able to speak, and they had their ear up against the plexiglass, and it was just comical. I'm not sure how we adapt to doing business behind plexiglass and wearing masks. Maybe we'll just need to carry around a little sign and write things out. I don't know. But anyway. All right. As we talk about reopening the economy, reopening society, getting America back to work, people back engaged in going to church and socializing at a distance, how is the stock market responding to this? What does the economic future look like for America? Well, when I think about that, I turn to Dan Celia of Financial Issues, and he joins us now. Dan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
All right. So how is the stock market responding?
Well, the stock market certainly today is responding very, very well. But aside from today, it's been responding good for the last six trading days. I mean, it really seems to be feeling extremely optimistic, and that's what's going on today. We have a lot of optimism. And I think the president last week saying that, hey, if we have a resurgence, we're going to put out the fire, but we are not going to shut down the economy again. I think that brought more confidence, and nobody really talked about that, but it was definitely a pivotal moment for confidence coming back into the markets, because that brought confidence to CEOs and senior level executives who are going to have to make decisions to get started back again. And so business sentiment, I think, took a little bit of a turn for the better just from that. And then we get an announcement today. You've got Merck saying, hey, we're going to form a partnership with two other companies, one a treatment company, one's a vaccine company, and another company out of Gaithersburg, Maryland, close to you down there, that is, you know, very close to human trials with a vaccine.
Right.
So really a lot of optimism today, and I think it's going to stay around.
Well, I think you're absolutely right on both points. I think the president saying we're not going to do this again reassures CEOs and others that they can bring the workforce back. They don't have to think, oh, we're going to go through this again in 2 months. So there's this tentative nature of doing business is put aside, contracts let, you know, all of that. So business begins to ramp back up without fear of the plug being pulled again. And then I would think that once a vaccine is proven and we have it in hand, distribution begins, that you're going to see another surge in the stock market.
No doubt about it, Tony. You're hitting the nail on the head. That's what everybody knows is coming. One of the things that's interesting is, you know, I don't know if you remember, but there were a lot of experts saying 3 weeks ago, we're not so sure they can even develop a vaccine. And Dr. Gottlieb this morning said, look, what this does is it tells us that there can be a vaccine. Mm-hmm. And that's huge. That's huge. So we know that this is the kind of thing that we will be able to vaccinate against. And he said himself, I think I've been wrong. I think we're going to get a vaccine sooner than everybody thought we were.
So, Dan Celia, with this information, we see the economy picking back up, businesses starting again. How should, you know, the average consumer, the American citizen, I mean, our listeners, how should they be responding to this news? What are some of the practical steps they need to be taking going forward to be financially stable in what could still be a little uncertainty in our future?
So you just said a word that is so key, and that's stable. So my belief is that the average Joe, you and I and the people listening, they need to not react to these, you know, dramatic increases in the market. I know it's tempting, but let's react on stability. So when we start to see, so you missed a little bit of run-up. You should be an investor in for the long term. It's not the end of the world that you missed a little bit of run-up, but you missed it because you were waiting for stability. And stability is the best thing that you could have as an investor. Yes, you know, it's going to still be a little volatile, but once we start seeing stability, things really starting to level off, that's when you want to think about getting in. Don't react on good news or even bad news. Just stand fast and wait for some stability.
Keep it between the yellow lines there.
Yes,
the white
sir.
Lines.
You
that's
got
right.
It.
All right.
You got it. Yep.
Dan Celia, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. You're welcome.
All right. Dan Celia, to find out more, he's got good information, good advice when it comes to, all things. But the economy is his specialty, stock market, investing. Check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right. Over the weekend, a story emerged saying that there are some within the Trump White House working to scuttle the conservative RNC GOP platform. Ken Blackwell is here to talk about it next. Don't go away. We're back after this.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Over the weekend, Axios, which is one of those online publications, had a story that said inside the secret talks to overhaul the GOP platform. They suggested that there are those working within the White House to scuttle the 2016 platform, 58-page platform, which I had a part in writing, most conservative platform the party's ever had, saying that they needed to eliminate the alienating language. Well, I want to talk about the importance of the party platform and historically what it's done. Why is it important? Does it really matter? And joining me for that conversation, Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati, secretary of state, also treasurer for the state of Ohio. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you.
Now, we know from history, actually, Stephen F. Austin University did a study over about four decades of these party platforms that, and they're not just a document that people that wear funny hats put together every 4 years. It's actually a document that governs the party, and nearly 90% of the time the Republicans follow that party platform. About 75% of the times the Democrats do. So these things actually matter, don't they?
Absolutely, Tony. The platform, as you just mentioned, is a framework for governing. Millions of GOP grassroots activists and leaders, as well as thousands of elected officials, view the platform as a document that distinguishes us from the opposition party. It provides voters with a real choice, not an echo. And so it's very important that we understand the development of the platform. For the last 36 years, I've been involved in GOP conventions. And in 2008, I was vice chairman of the platform committee. It is a very tedious business, but, you know, the voices of the people are heard, and it's really geared towards making sure that we give voters a real distinction between the parties in terms of direction. And the platform that you were very, very important in shaping in 2016 has evolved over the years from the work of Phyllis Schlafly and Ed Meese and others. And at the bottom line, we cannot afford to think of the platform as something that is just a marketing instrument that you can get and put in your vest pocket on a, you know, 5x3, 8x5 card. You just can't do it.
Well, in fact, our exit polling after the 2016 election showed that 59% of Trump-Pence voters voted for them based upon the party platform statement on life, judges, and religious liberty. Now, let me, one thing that Barack Obama understood, I mean, he probably understood a lot of things, but I didn't agree with him, but one thing he did better than anybody else until Trump was he understood what it meant to reach your base and base elections when you are in a country where you are so narrowly divided, as we are, as we continue to be as a nation. Making sure that those who align with your policies turn out to vote is critical. And the party platform was essential in 2016 for that effort.
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be a base turnout election. In the last election, three states were decided by under 100,000 votes. While I think the president is well positioned, it is not a slam dunk. And we cannot afford to, in fact, weaken the enthusiasm that people have built up over the last 4 years. He had a punch list of commitments, promises, and he has a track record now of promises made, promises kept, but they were all bound together by the framework of that party platform.
Right. Now, to be clear, this article in no way, form or fashion suggested that the president was behind wanting to scuttle the party platform. There are those, I think, around him that don't clearly understand. I think he's a genius when it comes to politics. He understands how to reach and connect with people. And as you pointed out, all of those issues he made promises on, he has been systematically keeping them. But I just think sometimes, you know, we're not always well served by, when I speak of presidents, well served by those around them. And this is something clearly the White House needs to understand. That was a critical component.
Absolutely, Tony. And we are engaged in a discussion. This sort of give and take is not unique to this administration, but we must make sure our voices are heard.
Yeah.
Stay the course. Stay the course.
All right, Ken Blackwell, we definitely will stay the course. We'll stay 6 feet apart, but we'll stay the course.
God bless you, brother.
All right, Ken Blackwell, as always, great to talk with him. All right, well, let's talk about some of the accomplishments of this administration. I've told you this before. This administration has amassed a record, not rhetoric, but a record of accomplishments when it comes to faith, family, freedom, all the issues that that we care about. And they are presently working on yet another one. This goes back, and a lot of this is cleanup, right? It's taken, I mean, we're going to be 4 years into this administration, and they're still cleaning up from the Obama administration. This has to do with a proposed rule, that adds religious freedom protections to the Affordable Care Act. Joining me now to talk about this is FRC's Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, so explain this rule change and the reason this is being proposed by the Trump administration.
Yeah, so this indeed does go back quite a ways. Going back to the Obama administration, one of the things President Obama had done was implement a requirement that Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, be interpreted to define sex non-discrimination as including pregnancy-related matters and gender identity. And so what this has done is violated and forced the potential violation of many people, institutions of faith who are in the healthcare world, who do not want to be forced into situations where they're told you have to perform a medical procedure or make a certain provision of services and do so against your conscience. I mean, that's the situation that they were placed in by President Obama. and his HHS, Health and Human Services, did not fix this issue. Organizations had to sue a number of groups, including the Franciscan Alliance, Christian Medical Dental Association, brought lawsuits. These lawsuits have been going on for years. President Trump came into office and has sought to fix this problem with a revision to the HHS rules that would eliminate the burdensome religious liberty violating provisions here and allow the Franciscan Alliance and CDMA and others to step out from the place in which they're being forced to violate their conscience. This is a religious liberty issue. It's an issue of making sure that institutions can provide the best medical care as they see fit. The administration is saying, you know, others can provide the care or the demands, the requests of individuals who want to go for gender transition procedures and other procedures that some are objecting to. But we're going to protect the religious liberty of those who have a conscience problem with this. And we've had now, you know, these conscience violations have been going on for years. So what President Trump's been doing is trying to correct this issue. And he's on the road to correcting it by finalizing this proposed rule that would eliminate the burdensome religious freedom Section 1557 violations or concerns that had been around since President Obama. And the White House is about to make this final and register another notch in the belt of religious liberty victories. We've flagged this as a victory in administration accomplishments in terms of them addressing this. And now it's a question of going the extra distance and making it final.
So very practically speaking, folks, what this simply does is it for healthcare professionals, those that are in the medical field, many of them that enter that profession because of their faith to serve others, to serve their fellow man, what they were forced with under the Obama regime was that they had to perform procedures and acts which violated their conscience. For instance, they would be forced into being a part of abortions. And what's really raised the ire of the left is that they were also being forced to engage in gender surgery, gender transformation surgeries, where they would they have to mutilate people. And, I mean, that runs counter to what many of them entered the medical field for. And so it's not that anyone's being denied a service. It's just saying you can't force a medical professional to do something that violates their conscience or their religious beliefs. So this simply recognizes that, which, Travis, what we heard, what we saw, was that this was forcing some to choose other professions other than the field of medicine because of fear that they would be confronted with having to choose between their faith and leaving a career that they spent years preparing for.
That's right. And we do know that a number of medical professionals have said, you know, they're not going to violate their conscience. They're going to quit. They're going to walk away before they violate the obligations that they owe to God. I mean, these are matters of faith. They're not going to compromise on them. So what you're going to do, in essence, when a government comes along with a heavy-handed approach like we've had in place in the prior administration, you're going to force a segment of the medical professional field to walk away and dilute that field and
right,
dilute the
right.
care that people receive. So to really ensure the best care, we need to have faith protected, religious freedom protected. President Trump's been doing a great job on this, and this rule will ensure that we continue to walk down this road.
And folks, you can weigh in on this and encourage the administration in these actions. I know a lot of times people take will take action when something bad is happening. This is something good that is happening. Although I want you to know that the other side is hammering the administration, and it would be helpful for the administration to hear that there are people that are appreciative and support this. So you can actually call the White House. The White House has a comment line. Although I'm not sure, Travis, I need to check on this before we give out the number, because I think I called the other day and I think they may not be operating right now because of certain things are shut down because of the coronavirus. So I need to check on that before we give out the number. But when we look at these issues, this is very similar to what we saw in the military, the attacks on religious freedom in the military, where, you know, 5-6 years ago, we had people of faith that were, you know, having to make a decision. Do I go in the military where this is there's an environment hostile to my faith, or do I go in? And I know that the general and I had that conversation with many parents when it came to our nation's military. And when you look at our military, and I would say the same applies for the medical field, we want people of faith. We want Christians. We want those who understand they're accountable to God, but also with a heart of service to their fellow man. That, I believe, is critical in every aspect of society. But when you look at those types of those areas of public service, it's absolutely essential. And that's why we have to protect religious freedom.
Tony, it is. And this is why, you know, we have groups representing many healthcare professionals like the Christian Medical Dental Association, others bring lawsuits, because there are many out there whose voice is below the surface, who are faithfully living out their obligations to God and what has been put on their conscience as a matter of faith. They just want to peacefully continue to do that and be left free to live out their lives, serve others, serve those around them. These are key areas of society in which we need to ensure faith is protected. And Tony, I do believe that you know, if people want to let the White House know their support for this HHS rule that is about to be finalized, they can find the link at tonyperkins.com and fill out the White House form, letting the White House know they support the finalization of the HHS rule on Section 1557, and thank the president for his continued record on religious liberty.
Yep, I think that's the best way to go. The comment line is still not active, so we'll just send it via the message there would be best. So, folks, go to tonyperkins.com. It's helpful to reinforce these positive steps. And speaking of the positive steps, I again want to give out this number. If you'd like to have a list of all of the things that the Trump administration has done on issues of faith, family, freedom, religious freedom, text me at 51555. That's 51555. The word actions, that's plural, actions. I will send you back a link which will lead you to a PDF, which is probably 6-7 pages long, of all of the accomplishments. Date, it's not commentary. It lists what they have done. So important for you to share with your friends, because elections have consequences. And a administration that is pursuing policy changes like Travis and I have been talking about are critical. And it's very important that you know this. Share it with your friends. Again, the number 51555, the word actions. I'll send a link over to you. Travis, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate all the work that you and the government affairs and policy team does here at the Family Research Council.
Thank you, Tony.
And to find out more, folks, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and go over to the website, frc.org. Lots of information there for you that can be helpful in keeping you up to date on what's happening here in our nation. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.